Chapter 7. Ullinor, Primary Landing Zones. The crack of detonating missiles announced the arrival of the Black Templars. Lascannon beams and the bark of autocannons greeted the orcs that scurried from their ugly barrack blocks, heading towards a ring of improvised anti-aircraft emplacements set about the edge of the huge crater. Three storm eagles descended, weapons scouring the aliens and buildings scattered on the waste ground surrounding the flat expanse. Above them, a pair of Thunderhawk transporters swooped groundwards, each bearing a Predator tank in its grip. Thick dust and ash swirled as retro thrusters fired, slowing the Thunderhawks over the last few meters of their landing. Before the extended hydraulic legs had touched down, the assault ramps opened, spewing forth the warriors of Beaumont. The High Marshal bounded forward, every leap covering 24 meters with the aid of bursts from his jump pack. His honor guard followed a few meters behind, chainswords whirring. Other squads fanned out across the crater, their bolters snapping as they gunned down greenskins skulking in the cover of revetments and trenches dug into the crater wall. Fortifications that were poorly positioned directed outwards to protect the crater. Their warrior cargo disgorged, the Storm Eagles lifted off in a fresh gale of grit and flame, their renewed storm of fire levelling several more bunkers and hovels. The transporters took their place, dropping their battle tanks, tracks already spinning, the last couple of meters. As the Predators landed, they lurched forward in spumes of dust, turret and sponson locks disengaging to allow their gunners to open fire. Heavy bolter rounds and concentrated autocannon salvos added to the storm of destruction tearing along the crater walls. Beaumont's squad reached the incline just as a Hellstrike missile streaked overhead to pierce an armored gun turret turning in their direction. The detonation tore the emplacement apart from within, scattering burning metal and charred orc flesh over the bare rock of the crater edge. The High Marshal's jump pack easily took him over a chest-high retaining wall. Plunging into the trench beyond, he landed on a greenskin, the impact shattering its skull beneath his armoured boots, even as his sword cleaved through the neck of another. The rest of his honoured veterans crashed into the fortifications, hewing through the aliens within. Snarling greenskins and black-armoured warriors turned the entrenchment into a boiling melee, while more blasts and bolts screamed overhead. It took 20 seconds to clear the first stretch of trench line. "Is that the best these scum can offer?" roared Edorin. The sergeant tore the head from an orc corpse and, with a snarl, threw it at the burning fortifications further up the slope. "We came seeking warriors and found juveniles and cripples!" Beaumont saw that it was true. Most of the bodies were of smaller greenskins, poorly armoured and armed. The few that seemed to have attained mature size and weight sported prosthetics and bionics, some so crude as to be simple hooks and plain metal peg legs.
"Gun garrison, poor duty for an orc," said Beaumont.
"Such is the number plaguing the Segmentum Solar. Perhaps all of their true warriors have deserted this waste hole," said Edorin, sounding disappointed by the prospect.
Beaumont pointed with his sword to the building-covered mountain reaching over the horizon, the city obscured by distance and the shimmer of its force field.
"Foes enough await our righteous intentions, brothers," said the High Marshal. "The great beast lurks within that city, and with the Emperor as my witness, I declare the abomination will fall to the blade of a Black Templar. As Sigismund upon the bloody fields of terror, so we shall seek out the strongest foes and overcome them."
He moved his blade towards the sky, where the black dots of descending drop pods were visible against the low clouds. With them emerged bulkier shapes, more Thunderhawk transporters, laden with rhino-armoured carriers and other vehicles.
"We push on to Gorkagrod, High Marshal?" asked Edorin, moving to the edge of the trench.
"Not yet. Temper your zeal, Brother Sergeant," replied Beaumont. "We hold the landing zone until our allies in the Navy have deposited the regiments of the Astra Militarum. We are the sharp spearpoint, but the weight of the haft must follow us today."
Edorin looked up at the crater's edge, and Beaumont could imagine his sergeant's desire to continue the attack, his longing to take the fight to the enemy and punish them for their innumerable transgressions against the Emperor.
"Justice will be done, brothers. Vengeance will be served," he assured his warriors.
He gestured towards the remaining buildings.
Ensure nothing lives that does not call the Emperor master.
Beaumont activated his jump pack and bounded from the trench, angling towards the burning buildings ahead. Around the crater, black armored warriors pushed through the fire and ruin.
The highway is secure, Lord Commander.
Odenathus used the high-powered Vox unit of his Land Raider command tank to transmit his report. Even though only 15 kilometers separated him from Corlin's position, the Vox breaking interference reduced the range of his warplate's communicator to a few hundred meters. Contact with orbit was virtually non-existent.
Astra Militarum landings are progressing on schedule, he continued. Armored, artillery, and infantry companies are awaiting our advance. Understood, Chapter Master, came Corlin's crackle-broken reply. You are authorized to conduct the second phase. Companies from Issachar's command will rendezvous at the Primaris target grid in 3 hours. Affirmative, Lord Commander.
Odenathus shut down the transmitter and replaced his helmet. Pushing open the upper hatch of the Land Raider, he climbed out onto the roof to survey the unfolding scene. The ultramarines were a cordon of blue, describing an arc nearly 2 kilometers long, a wall of armored warriors between the landing zone and Gorkagrod, some 20 kilometers away. His auto-senses picked up the faint bark of bolters as squads continued to clear the surrounding wasteland of Xenos. Thunderhawks, whirlwind missile launchers, and land speeders were extending the ultramarines' perimeter, pounding alien fortifications, weakening them in preparation for the armored assault of predators, vindicators, and land raiders that Odenathus would lead. Overhead roared Imperial Navy bombers, destined for targets further along the main arterial route into the Orc city. There seemed little response from the Orcs. Considering a large enemy force had landed within striking distance of their capital, the counteroffensive by the Greenskins had been minimal. Lackluster. All that the Ultramarines commander knew of the Greenskins told him that they were voracious fighters, lusting for battle. Even if some grander strategy was desired by the great beast, it seemed unlikely to overrule the base instincts of the Orcs in the immediate vicinity. The lack of response left Odenathus feeling ill at ease, unable to test his theories, but aware that all was not as it appeared. Adeptus Mechanicus' bulk servitors cleared the wreckage of the buildings turned to rubble by the Ultramarines' attack, ploughs and pneumatic shovels turning masonry, metal, and dirt into earthworks for the Astra Militarum engineers to fortify while simultaneously clearing more landing zone for the next wave of transports. Of the stronghold that had squatted on the ridge 2 hours earlier, only broken debris remained. Orc cadavers were treated like the rest of the waste, unceremoniously dumped into pits dug into the polluted earth, a task that had been assigned to the punishment platoons of the Astra Militarum landing forces. They labored with scarves tied over their bare faces, sweating despite the chill of the uplands. Black-coated commissars watched them closely, never slow to shout admonishment at any that seemed to slacken in their labors. Naval dropships formed an inner boundary, 17 of them so far, as many again still arriving from orbit. Some were tank carriers, flat and broad, with wide doors that allowed their cargoes to disembark 3 abreast. The troop barges were longer and narrower, 100-strong columns of infantry emerging at the double.
A labor misspent, brother Chapter Master!
Odenathus turned the metallic growl of ancient Celotonus. The dreadnought approached from the right, the top of his armored plates almost level with the roof of the Land Raider. Encased within the plasteel, ceramite, and adamantium giant were the system-sustained bodily remnants of a space marine, a great hero from the battles of Kalth that was.
Misspent, venerable brother!
Odenathus reviewed his dispositions and could see nothing amiss.
What labor goes awry?
Siege lines! Supply corridors! These are the works of an occupying force, Chapter Master,
the dreadnought said, every word from his vocalizers heavy with artificially intoned gravitas. He raised a claw-tipped power fist and pointed towards the distant objective.
We come to kill the great beast. Our sojourn here will not last long in victory or defeat.
Odenathus thought about this for several seconds, reviewing the situation. It was a planetary landing on an unprecedented scale. There were protocols and doctrines to ensure all passed smoothly. He caught himself realizing the error of his logic. The landings were unprecedented by his experience, but for a veteran of the Heresy Wars, they were a straightforward incursion.
"What counsel would you share, Ancient One?" he asked the Dreadnought. "Speed in all things, Chapter Master. The Astra Militarum are capable of fending for themselves. We should strike for the city as soon as possible."
The Chapter Master nodded and moved back to the hatch. He needed to request fresh orders from the Lord Commander. From the observation platform of the Praetor Fidelis, Field Legatus Otto Dorr could more clearly see the odd topography of the landing zone. From orbit, it had looked like a series of eight mesas, each rising a few hundred meters from the wasteland's mean level. On the upper gallery of his Capital Imperialis command vehicle, itself 40 meters high, the regularity, the sheer flatness of the surrounding rocky plateaus, struck him as conspicuous. The immense war machine rumbled on, its tracks leaving meter-deep trails of compacted ash and dust. Around the Praetor Fidelis, smaller tanks and assault gun squadrons moved away from the landers, following the command vehicle like the tail of a comet. Sentinel walkers and Rough Rider companies moved ahead to scout the best route for the Praetor Fidelis and more super-heavy tanks descending in the next wave. A sudden vibration silenced the chatter of Vox operators and junior officers. Dorr felt the movement again, a shift in the ground, significant enough that it could be felt through the grinding of the Capital Imperialis' tracks and the constant rumble of its engines.
"Galtan!"
His staff lieutenant snapped to attention at the sound of his name.
"What was that? Contact the tech priests immediately. I want..."
The next tremor caused the lumen fittings to sway from the ceiling. Several of the deck's occupants had to grab their consoles to stop themselves tipping from their stools. Dorr swayed with the movement, stumbling as he took a step towards the reinforced windows. Looking down, he saw that several of the surrounding vehicles had bogged down, caught as shifting dunes slid into newly formed dells littering the canyons between the plateaus.
"Sir, look at the rock faces!"
Galtan's call drew the Field Legatus's gaze to the cliff a few hundred meters directly ahead of the Praetor Fidelis. Boulders tumbled in a shower of dust. Through the murk of the landslide, he saw racks run up the length of the rock. Stone split along unseen fault lines, thousands of tons of rock shearing away as something beneath, within, moved. Alarm sirens shrieked from half a dozen positions as the ground lurched again, tipping the Capital Imperialis to the left. Men and women tumbled across the observation deck, and mechanical howls of protest shuddered through the war machine as drive systems tried to continue pushing the tilting Praetor Fidelis into the growing drifts of rock, sand, and ash.
"All drives to idle!" barked Dorr.
"Sir!"
Galton's hand tugged at the Field Legatus's brocaded sleeve.
"You have to come to the gyro. I've ordered full staff council evacuation."
"You've ordered?"
"My prerogative, Field Legatus."
The junior officer signaled to a stern-faced commissar standing by the stairwell that led up to the flight platform atop the command vehicle.
"Strecken will look after you."
"Come with me, sir."
Strecken's tone suggested he would brook no argument. His hand on the butt of a shock maul indicated he was also willing to take physical measures to ensure the Field Legatus's safety. Dorr allowed himself to be hurried up the stairs. Emerging onto the flight platform, he saw that the Capital Imperialis had heeled over almost 20 degrees. The recon gyro, a four-rotored flyer capable of carrying five men in addition to the pilot, was still tightly gripped by landing claws.
"What is happening?"
Dorr demanded, stepping away from the gaggle of officers surging up the stairs behind him. Strecken looked as though he might intervene, but stopped as the Field Legatus directed a glare at him.
"You may have the authority to detain me, Commissar, but I would think twice about exercising it."
The towering rock plateaus were falling to pieces, revealing glinting metal beneath. Like petals unfolding, huge plates hinged down, unleashing crushing deluges of rock onto the men and tanks between. Looking behind, Dorr could see one of the massive structures fully opened. Where there had been a mesa of solid stone, so he had thought, he could see a pointed dome at least 100 meters across. It was painted in huge checks of red and black.
"Is that?"
"Yes, sir,"
Galton said hurriedly. seizing hold of the stunned Field Legatus's belt to drag him towards the open doors of the gyro. The blade started to spin, the whine of motors almost lost under the tumult of falling rocks and the shrieks of pulverized tank armor. The cacophony swallowed the screams of the dying, their last cries passing unheard 40 meters below. Bundled into the gyro, Dor had not even strapped on his safety harness when the engines pitched to a shriek, and he felt the craft lift away. Already at an awkward angle, the gyro sheared sideways towards the grey and black avalanche until the pilot heaved the flyer into a swift climb. A cloud of choking ash and dust, mixed with exhaust smoke, swept through the still-open door of the compartment, coating uniforms, lips and skin with powdery residue. The updraft shook the gyro, its rotors rattling through stone splinters. The Field Legatus shouldered past Galtan, noting that Commissar Strecken had remained behind on the stricken Capital Imperialis. Through the murk, wiping grit from his eyes, Dor looked out of the ascending gyro, able to see across the expanse of the landing zone. He could not credit his own senses at first, but the impossible forced its way into recognition. Where there had been rock and wilderness, now Dor watched 8 missiles push up from their silos, each defying sanity with their size.
"We have to warn the others," he croaked, swallowing dust.
A captain manning the Vox station looked at him. The blood drained from his face. He was holding the speaker piece against his ear to listen over the continuing storm of noise.
"They already know, sir. By the throne, they already know."
Like a cornered animal, Orlanor bared its fangs. Years of psycho-doctrination meant that Captain Valifor could not panic. Vigorous mental conditioning and genetic therapy had eliminated biological fear. Even so, as a cocktail of hormones and stimulants raced through his bloodstream, as twin hearts thundered into accelerated life and his tertiary lung inflated to flood his system with oxygen, the biological call to action that seared through his body and thoughts came very close. The desert had swallowed 6 Astra Militarum dropcraft already, the yawning chasm that had split the basin still widening. Dust and ash flowed like water into the breach, dragging tanks and men with it. Ruddy light, the gleam of the abyss itself, burned from the new crevasse, and with it came an ear-piercing screech of tortured metal. The plane was shifting under his feet, toppling columns of soldiers that had been advancing from the landing barges. He could feel himself moving slowly to the right without taking a step. He watched as a Lehman Russ tank tilted, trapped against a boulder. Hatches slammed open as the crew tried to scramble to safety. Too late, too slow, they fell into the gaping rift with their vehicle. The Vox was a thrum of meaningless noise, every general channel and frequency overloaded. He shut down all but the Adeptus Astartes feeds. The garbled bursts were replaced by clipped, efficient reports and unruffled commands. The relative quiet allowed him to focus on the immediate situation. Valifor's autosenses brought him to the insistent bellows of officers and the terrified shouts of dying guardsmen. Many of the Astra Militarum infantry were breaking ranks, fleeing towards the distant lip of the basin. Commissars did their best to prevent the retreat becoming a rout. The Blood Angel could hear them exhorting their men to keep weapons and packs, ordering them to drag their heavy bolters and las cannons, autocannons and mortars through the undulating dunes of ash and dirt. A slew of rocks and earth was building up against the walls of the hollow, forming a ramp for some of the vehicles to drive over while men clambered through the churning debris. Many disappeared beneath the surface, while others were bloodily crushed by rolling boulders or suffocated by erupting clouds of dust.
"Our forces are clear, Captain."
Marbas was at Valifor's shoulder, golden armor coated with dark grey ash. He waved a hand towards red-liveried rhinos, predators and land raiders, just visible through the whirling dust storm.
"What are your orders?"
Valifor could see that the chasm was now nearly 50 meters wide. Several of his land speeder crews had already taken it upon themselves to act as lifeboats, skimming dangerously close to the rolling stones and earth, laden with guardsmen, clinging to every handhold. Valkyries and Vendettas, in the colours of the Imperial Navy and the Coltane 15th Air Dragoons, skimmed to and fro, their hover jets kicking up even more ash and soot. The men and women aboard hauled up as many fellow soldiers as they could, filling their troop compartments to bursting. Here and there, brave pilots set their machines down so that wounded soldiers could be loaded aboard. Valafor saw a Vendetta crushed like a rations can as a boulder twice the size of a troop transport tumbled into it.
"Get the Thunderhawks! Rapid evacuation!"
Valafor watched as a ring of drop pods vanished into the depths. He had landed in one just a few hours earlier. He turned and waded back down into the basin. His auto-senses flickered through various modes until they settled on thermal, picking out the fleeing men and women like flares at night. A gaggle of soldiers struggled towards him a few meters away. The swirling ash was like quicksand, dissolving underfoot. Valafor heaved the closest man out of the mire as easily as an adult lifts a child, almost throwing him towards the basin's edge. Another cradled a broken arm, blood staining his light blue uniform. Valafor saw the injury and knew that the soldier would not fight again. He stepped past, ignoring the man's pleas for help. Other blood angels followed, advancing into the raging storm to help the beleaguered Imperial Guardsmen.
"Concentrate on the uninjured," Valafor voxed to his companions.
The mounting dirt was heaped up almost to his knees. The captain kicked himself free and looked around at the devastation. From the long-range broadcasts on the vox, he knew that their predicament was far from unique.
"We're going to need every able-bodied soldier,"